I thought since the Feast of Trumpets is 4 days away, or 5 days away, how many days away is it? Five. I thought I'd talk a little bit about the Feast of Trumpets. You know, a lot of times at the Feast of Trumpets, you don't really hear an explanation of the day. And the reason for that is if you did that every Feast of Trumpets, it'd get sort of old if you just heard an explanation of it. So I thought, well, today, since it's out coming up next week, would be a good time to rehearse some of this and take another look at the Feast of Trumpets. In Leviticus 23 and verse 2, it says this. Leviticus 23 and verse 2. It says, "Speak to the children of Israel." Uh-oh, it's not for us. Now, keep in mind, he had to be talking to somebody. But I found that unless a person, their name is inserted there, they always say, well, you see, that's for somebody else. But he had to be talking to somebody. In this case, he was talking to the children of Israel. And he said, "Say unto them concerning the feast of the Lord." Now, whose feast? The Lord's feast. And someone, I think it was Ron Dart, said these are appointments that God expects us to keep, that if you had an appointment with your doctor or your dentist, you would want to keep that. So here are the appointments with God. It says, "Holy convocations, even these are my feasts, these are the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim in their seasons." Speaking to the children of Israel, chapter 23 and verse 24. Let's skip on down. Leviticus 23 and verse 24, chapter 23 and verse 24, "Speaking to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, shall you have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord." Now, what's interesting about this is how very little is said about this feast day. You know, most of the other feast days, there's a little bit better explanation there. I think of atonement. There's this elaborate explanation of atonement, the two goats and all that. And of course, Passover and unleavened bread, it tells you, you know, to take in leaven and put out the unleavened bread. But this one, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, I'm supposed to blow a trumpet. What's the point of that? I mean, what is that? I mean, what's that all about? We've had people ask, and why don't we blow a trumpet at the Feast of Trumpets? And we have done that before. I mean, someone brought a trumpet one time, and I think they went out there and during the Feast of Trumpets and blew that. And I have nothing against that. But one of the reasons it's not done as a doctrinal point in the church is in Numbers 10 and verse 8. Numbers 10 and verse 8. Numbers 10 and verse 8, and says, "And the sons of Aaron the priest shall blow with the trumpets, and they shall be to you for an ordinance forever throughout your generation." So it was delegated out to the priest to do this. And I guess since there is no temple and no priesthood, that's one of the reasons. I mean, I don't consider myself to be a priest. But as far as dogma or doctrine of why don't you blow this trumpet like they did back then, well, that's one of the reasons why we don't always do it like that, is because it was delegated out to the sons of Aaron, the priests, for the blowing of the trumpets on special events. But my question is why? What was it for? What was the trumpet used for? You know, you can look at it and you just say, okay, I'm supposed to blow the trumpet. And yet, we always want to ask, what's it about? What's the purpose? What's the use? There's nothing wrong with asking why. There's nothing wrong with asking God why and to try to figure that out for yourself as to what was these trumpets used for. Now, one of the first use is in Numbers 10 and verse 2. If you would turn there, Numbers 10 and verse 2. It says, "Make thee two trumpets of silver. Of a whole piece shall you make them, that you may use them for the calling of the assembly and for the journeying of the camps." Notice, for the calling of the assemblies. Now, keep in mind, they didn't have cell phones. They didn't have walkie-talkies. They didn't have email. They didn't have internet. They didn't have the Pony Express. This was one of their ways of communication, was by the blowing of the trumpets. In Numbers 10 and verse 9, you drop on down there and you'll notice another example of the trumpets. It says, and if you go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresses you, then you shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and you shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and you shall be saved from your enemies. So here, in another case of the blowing of the trumpets, is for battle time. Doesn't the president have what's called the red phone? Or if you go to war, there's a phone that is, you know, for that purpose, you know. So what I get out of this is that the trumpets was used for, one of the things it was used for, was mass communication. It was a way they communicated one with another. And I think that's interesting if we just think about that long and hard. Because in Isaiah 58 and verse 1, God will tell us, cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, and show my people their sins. You know, when God gave this day, the Feast of Trumpets, and it says, you shall have a memorial of blowing of the trumpets, a holy convocation. Do you suppose that God was looking down through history at such a time as this, when knowledge would be increased and technology would allow us to communicate at the touch of a keypad? You know, cell phones, internet, email, Facebook, television, radio. And through those instruments, through those trumpets, God would say, I want you to give a message. Lift up your voice like a trump. Show my people their sins. They had different trumpets that were used for different purposes back then. And we have all kinds of forms of abilities to communicate with people, modern technology today. I mean, think about it. How many of you have a cell phone? Yeah. That's one type of trumpet. Computers, newspapers, radio, television, the mail. So, in a way, we've gone from knowing next to nothing about this Feast of Trumpets to understanding that it was their mass form of communication. And we can go from there to our modern day trumpets, our mass forms of communication that we can use to communicate a message to people. And I think that's one of the things, when you know, when you read that, lift up your voice like a trumpet, show my people their sins, that's one of the things that we are to be doing. I am amazed that I've heard of groups, Church of God groups, that have no outreach. One group said, we don't want to grow. They enjoyed their little clique, their little group, and growth is painful. And they said, we don't have outreach because we don't want to grow. We would rather just sit around, split doctrinal hairs, figure out everything, you know, and just sort of perfect ourselves. Let's just get everything right. Did you know that the Great Commission is not a suggestion? It is a command. Go ye therefore into all the world. And you sometimes have people, groups, that are just meeting together and trying to achieve perfection. Let's just get everything right before we do anything. Did you know that the more you try to achieve rightness, the more you cut yourself off from the center that you're trying to reach? It's almost an automatic happening that the more I obsess on getting everything right, the more I distance myself from the center out there. Does that make sense? Are you sure it makes sense? And I believe that there are people that have so distanced themselves from the outside world that they are rendered totally ineffective when it comes to outreach because of this obsession on getting everything right. This really hit home with me. We were went down to Charleston, South Carolina. We were eating breakfast, Trace and myself. And I saw something that I hadn't seen in 20 years. It was two nuns. I hadn't seen a nun since I watched The Sound of Music, I guess. These were real live ones, too. And I looked and I thought, I can't believe this. And I suddenly realized that it would be a cold day in hell when I would ask those two women for spiritual advice. Because of what they are. Because of that persona of, you know, the clothing and all that. I mean, it's just, I would never walk up to them and say, hey, I'm seeking spiritual advice. Tell me about Jesus. I would not do that. Not in a million years. And I realized that, you know, a lot of times that's the way the disciples didn't say, well, Lord, we got to get everything right before we go out and do your work. Go ye therefore into all the world. I've got to perfect myself before I do that. They were painfully aware of their humanity. They were painfully aware of their mistakes. They were painfully aware of their sins. And I love the story that Peter had denied Jesus three times. And Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, do you love me more than these? Jesus was deliberately rubbing Peter's nose in his sin, his denial. And he said to him, well, yeah, Lord, I love you. And he said, feed my sheep. He said to him the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, do you love me? Again, rubbing his nose in his sin that he had committed, the denial of Christ. And he said, yea, Lord, you know that I love you. He said, feed my sheep. He said to him a third time, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time. And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. That positive affirmation that even though he was reminding Peter of his humanity, of his sins, of his mistakes, he said, I got a job for you. You're going to do this. Feed my sheep. Do the work that I've called you to do. Peter didn't say, well, Lord, I can't do it until I get myself perfect. No. Do the work. We have to realize. In fact, someone said that a good dose of failure is the best thing you've got going for you if you want to be used by God. It's the best thing you've got. I know my own personal life. For many years, I struggled in areas, and I thought, Lord, why haven't I gotten the victory over this? And, you know, this went on for years and years and years, and I would look back, and finally, hindsight 2020, I look back on it, and I realized the most valuable thing I have going for me is that good dose of failure in my life if I am to reach other people. Now, what did Jesus say about the trumpet? Matthew 6 and verse 2. It says, therefore, when you do your alms, giving, that is, do not sound a trumpet before thee as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets. When you give, now this is amazing. I have often visualized this, you know, the righteous man giving into the treasury. And maybe I always visualized a little midget, you know, blowing the trumpet and went along behind him, you know. A little short, somebody's got to be a little short guy. I don't know why, but, you know. But as he would drop money into the treasure, he would, you know, and just to draw attention to the fact that he was giving. And do you think they did that? I mean, why would, you know, I mean, I don't know what happened. But this is brought up, don't do this, that you may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. And the reward is the glory of men. Men look at that and say, wow, he's giving a lot. His name is on a plaque. He donated $10 million or whatever. Now, do you use our mass form of communication for the glory of God. All the things that we've got out there, our telephones, our cell phones, our computers, our Facebook, our this, our that, or whatever it is that we can communicate to the world. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Do we use our mass forms of communication to the glory of God or to the glory of men? Well, your business is doing really great. Man, I saw your ad in the magazine. I saw your ad on television. I heard your radio ad. You've really made a name for yourself, and everybody knows who you are, and you've made the top sales for the week. You know, and I know we have to promote our business, but if we spent the energy that we spend promoting our business and ourselves, if we spent just a half of that energy or a little bit of that energy on the work of God, you know, the good Lord only knows what could be accomplished. You know, and I'm not saying that we don't need to promote ourselves or our businesses, but I'm just trying to put the focus on, you look at the business world at large and you realize how much is spent, how much money, how much energy, how much time is used in that area. And what about the work of God in promoting that? We have young people today that can text at lightning speed. They can, you know, Twitter or whatever that is, Facebook. They can figure out technology in 5 minutes flat, but they will not use these modern trumpets to get a message to the world. It's used for something else. It's used to entertain oneself. And, you know, I'm saying that young people need to be doing more in the area of getting a message to the world. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Show my people their sins. I wonder, is our hearts really in the work of God? Do you know what we spend our money on? What's important to you? That's what we spend our money on. You know, and I can tell you where your top priorities are. It's whatever you spend your money on. That's where your top priorities are. Now, I can just hear someone say, well, wait a minute, I'll give my 10%. Yeah, and the other 90 is all for you. You know, I'm just saying, you know, it's how important is the work of God? Is it really important? How would God view how you judge the importance of the work of God? If he looked at your, you know, what you do. And I'm not just talking about giving money. I'm talking about, you know, your time can be just as valuable, more valuable than money, actually. It really is. In Matthew 10 and verse 23, and this, I think, is the last verse I'll use today. Matthew 10 and verse 23. No, it's next to the last. Matthew 10 and verse 23. But when they persecute you in this city, flee ye into another. Why would they be persecuted? Would they be persecuted for a message of just love the Lord, just accept Jesus, all heads bowed, all eyes closed? If you accept Jesus into your life, raise your hand. Would they be persecuted for that? I don't think so. These people were persecuted. Why? Lift up your voice like a trump. Show my people their sins. That's why they were persecuted. You don't tell people they're wrong. You don't tell people they're sinners without getting yourself killed or persecuted. Anyway, you have to flee. For verily I say unto you, and this is what the point I want to bring up, you shall have not gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man come. You're not going to get it done, the work. You shall have not gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man come. You see, I realize that what it's going to take to cut through all of the religious deception is the greatest mass form of communication to hit this earth since the world began. For 6,000 years, man has been hiding himself from God. Adam, where are you? You know, he's naked. Adam and Eve, they're naked, running around hiding from God. I heard your voice. And the people do the exact same thing today. They hear God's voice and they hide. Spiritually, they are naked because God sees straight through the clothes. This has been going on for 6,000 years. There is coming a day when there will be no place to hide. And it's found in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 52, which is really what this day sums up to be, or the meaning of this day, or one of the meanings of this day. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 52. It says, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruption must put on incorruption, and this mortal, what we are now, must put on immortality. How can anybody believe that we have an immortal soul now? It is beyond me, unless they totally refuse to read God's word. This mortal, what we are now, must put on immortality. This will be, this day will be, the greatest mass form of communication to hit this earth since the world began. It's when we are changed. In a way, it's when the gospel really goes out to all the world, to all the world. Now, something I just want to close with. Remember that map I used to have up here, the 25-mile radius of the church? The church was in the center, and it was a 25-mile radius map. And I said, somehow, how can we reach these people in that radius? The question is, when this day comes, the return of Christ, will there be any regrets? Will God say, you know, I had five or six people just right there, just 2 miles away, that we never contacted those people, and therefore they'll be in the second resurrection. Will we have regrets? And that, to answer that question, you'll have to come to Statesville for the message on the Feast of Trumpets. Yeah, to be continued. Will we have any regrets? And what we can do about those regrets and to make a difference so that when that day comes, there are no regrets because we did everything that we could possibly do to reach people.